This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Mike Schoep.
You might be mocking me or you might be staunchly agreeing with me. I can't tell.
I'm mocking you.
And the Bulldog.
What is Fozzie Bear's role in this production?
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Red and white. How do you think, what do you think about the vibes there?
I think they look like the Patriots throwbacks.
I don't know.
I feel like I'm the potential for me to be confused during the game, I think, is higher than normal.
You know what, New England? You're a 14-point underdog. This is the week to whip out some red helmets. Don't you think? Just to further the confusion. Wait a minute. Which team? What? Mike Giardi, our guest. We always love to talk to Mike. Boston Sports Journal. Mike recently tweeted, maybe, I think Mike's been doing a lot of this, words to this effect, Pat's, quote, a mess from the top down. Mike, as a reporter or even as a fan, do you go back to a Patriots era when maybe it was this bad or worse? Like, does Rod Rust, I don't know how much sort of tenure you have here, but obviously it's been a long time since New England seemed in such dire football straits.
Oh, 100% I go back. In fact, I go so far back that they were irrelevant in this town. Boston College football, especially around the Doug Flutie era, was 1,000 times more popular than anything the Patriots could put on the table. So I have lived it from that perspective. Certainly, though, not having covered it like this until most recently, but there, I don't think I'm understating it. I really think this is... This is about as bad as it can get, although I say that, and I still think there's another level or two for them to before they hit rock bottom.
Yeah, it feels to me from here, Mike, like at least like Drake May seems promising, yeah. And I don't know what else does. Maybe let's start on the coach. We'll get to May. How big of a deal is it that, I don't know, two times in the last month or so, he's said stuff in the heat of the moment after a game in a post-game news conference, and then the next day kind of had to walk it back on the radio. That happened again this week, and it happened a few weeks ago.
Yeah, well, he said, so this week was when asked about why they didn't, or if there was a consideration to running Drake May, they had a third and fourth and one inside the five, still a game at that point, and they handed the ball off twice, and they got stuffed twice. I believe that the organization has said we don't really want to call running plays for May. Like, this is, we're not at our point in development where we should risk him to any more hits other than when he scrambles. But they haven't come out and publicly said that. But so he was asked that question in the post game, and he said, "You said it, I didn't." And it literally, the room stopped. It was like, did he just do what I think he just did? Did he just take Alex Van Pelt and slap the bus in reverse and run him over, go forward, and then run back over him again? Like, it went over about as poorly as you would think. He tried to, again, clarify it later in the press conference and then again the next day, but nobody was buying what he was selling. And part of it is what you said. It's not just twice in the last month, guys. It's pretty much every week that he has to take something back that you go, wait a minute, did the head coach just say that? Oh, he did. Yeah, no, I didn't hear wrong. My ears weren't deceiving me. So he, I think we all feel like he's still on track to be the head coach next year, but I think this might have opened the door to the Kraft family to maybe consider, okay, we know we screwed up, but we were willing to stick by it, but maybe he's giving us an opening to say, we can't do this anymore.
Mike, then, what is the real problem? Is it that he should know, in your opinion, or maybe in the opinion of most reporters, what not to say or how not to be talking? Or is it what he's saying? You know, like, there, I think there's a difference.
Yeah, no, so I would say this, that were the team playing and showing growth, you know, here we are in what, heading into week 16, if you were showing growth and he had some critical comments about the coordinator or players or what have you, that maybe you would say, okay, like, I get it. I get, you know, like, you can see this, the path that they're taking, and it's working. And so if he wants to, you know, when he called him soft, they did kind of respond to it. So it's like, okay, I, you know, like, I wouldn't have said it. He didn't, you know, he tried to take it back, saying, we're playing soft, not that we are soft, you know, like, trying to discern. But, like, if you could see the path and the vision for what he's trying to do, I think it you could accept some of the missteps. But instead, it's, they're not getting any better. In fact, some would argue, you know, coming off the bye, that was one of their worst performances of the year. I mean, they looked like they didn't practice. They looked like they had no plan. So it's just sort of, I think, I've been pretty critical of it all along, and I think more and more people are kind of coming to it going, wait a minute, like, are you really going to sign up for this again next year? He's just, he talks about next year, like, I'll be better next year, when you're in the middle of the season. Like, it just... it seems very tone deaf to me in a lot of cases. And look, I will say this for him, as I ramble on here, like, part of this isn't his fault. He shouldn't be the head coach. He wasn't ready for it. He's been an assistant for 5 years. He never called the defense. Yeah, he ran the defensive meetings with Steve Belichick as the guy who called the plays, but you also still had Bill involved, right? So now he basically ascended from a position coach to a head coach. He doesn't have a Rolodex, so most of the hires on the staff are Elliot Wolf, the general managers. It's just, it's a bad marriage, and this team was, I think, further down than maybe even ownership thought they were. And to put an inexperienced guy in charge of it gets you to where you are, which is 3-11 and borderline laughingstock.
I'm glad you got to mention the soft comment. I'd forgotten about that one. I was thinking about the use of timeouts and him replying something along the lines of, "We've won Super Bowls doing it that way," or something.
Oh, that was a great one. He, you know, they also in overtime kicked into the wind. Like, they literally had no real answer or an explanation for why they did it. So there's just been, he's fond of saying after a game, like, oh, if you take away, you know, James Conner had a 53-yard run. Well, if you take away that run, you know, they didn't really do much on the ground. Well, actually, they rushed for 110 yards if you take away the 53 yards. But you can't take away the 53 yards because it happened in the game. And there's no, you don't get a magic button to erase the play. So they actually finished with 163 yards. 110's not good. 163 is awful, and that's what you gave up. So, like, he does that all the time, too. Like, well, if you take away this play, or if you take away that one 19-play drive that Indianapolis had to finish the game and get the 2-point, he said it. If you take away the one drive, we were pretty good on defense. Excuse me?
We
19-play drive.
We had, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln.
We take out a third of their offensive plays, and we did pretty good.
We had our years of this. How long? What would have been, you know, the right number for the Connor run, right? It shouldn't have been a zero, right? But you know, maybe just call it 15 yards or something like that. Where do we end up? Tone deaf might be right. Here's one risk the Patriots run if they make a move, though. Like, we were talking about Darnold earlier and just that state of flux. When you get a rookie quarterback and then into year two, you're making these kind of big moves. I don't know what the success rate is on Justin Fields, right? Like, on guys where that happens, Darnold with the Jets. And it's not to say that the player should have been a success necessarily, but it's not ideal, of course.
Well, if we're being realistic, if you're moving on, you're moving on for one guy. You're moving on for Mike Vrabel. And you're bringing Mike Vrabel, who, you know, he's already got, like, his sort of who he's going to bring to the next gig. Josh McDaniels, believe it or not, might be his offensive coordinator. And the Patriots would be more than open to having Josh come back as well. And I think at this point in Josh's career, the odds of him getting a head coaching job in the National Football League are pretty much zero. So you don't have to necessarily worry about the idea of, like, oh, if we hire the good young coach, either a young coordinator, and he gets the guy going. Now, like, the ship is pretty much sailed, I think, for Josh in that regard. So to me, that's, if you're going to do it, that's what you're doing it for. Vrabel and the Crafts had a messy exit when he was a player. He made comments about Patriot Place, which is the mall around the stadium, and said, like, shouldn't this be part of our earnings because we built it? And within, like, 2 weeks, he was sent to Kansas City as part of the Matt Cassel trade to Kansas City. But they patched it up. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame last year during the season, which went over poorly because he came up to it. It went over poorly with Tennessee and may have contributed in some way, shape, or form to the dissolution of their relationship. So, like, they're back on better ground. I think he would come back. But, again, it's whether the 83-year-old owner who has loyalty to Gerard Mayo and told people, you know, I made this decision 5-6 years ago on a retreat in Israel that Gerard was going to be my next coach, whether he's willing after, you know, not even a year and saying, sorry, buddy, you weren't ready, and I'm not going to live this mistake to see it through, to see you get to the other side of it. We're just not going to do it.
Mike Giardi, our guest, Boston Sports Journal, Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. So this game, I mean, it sounds pretty bleak for New England overall. It's going to be, what, December 23rd or whatever the date. That's not right, but whatever the date is, the 21st for this game. New Year's Eve last year, the Patriots come in at 4-11 or 4-11 as a 14-point underdog, just as they are right now for this game with Bailey Zappe. And it was close. I mean, 27-21. There was a kickoff return to start the game by the Patriots. The Bills also got a pick six. I don't know, Mike, when you think about New England at Buffalo, Bills are in better form than they were, I think, mostly like late last year. But still, how can the Patriots keep it interesting here?
Well, this should be an empty the tank game, right? Because definitely more scrutiny than Mayo has faced and the staff has faced. And they faced a fair amount here over the last, whatever, 6-8 weeks. But, okay, you just came off a terrible performance in Arizona coming off the bye. The buzzards are starting to circle. Like, you better unload everything you have in the clip for this one. And that's, to me, what it's going to be about. It's going to be about, let's do some things that we haven't done. Let's throw some trick plays at them. Let's blitz the hell out of Josh or whatever their plan is. Like, I don't think they can remain sort of on the same course that they've been on and expect it to be close. Because even the Arizona game, you look at it, it's, oh, they only lost by 13. They scored two garbage touchdowns. I mean, they were down 20 twice. You know, it's like Arizona basically said, we're going to play too high. You can do whatever you want. You take your 5 minutes to go down the field, go for it. You know, the game's over. So they've got to bring a lot more to the table than they have.
Yeah. How about May and like what the ceiling looks like? Like it feels from here like that there's promising signs there. Like my antenna always go up, Mike, when we hear anybody referred to as Josh Allen-esque, right? Josh Allen light. Because there's big arm talent. There's great, very good athleticism. And there also seems like there needs to be some refinement. So I kind of get the connection there. Like how promising a year has it been considering what he's working with around him?
Yeah, so I would say it's been very promising, and it's crazy because they're 2-7 in his 9 starts, and one of those wins was actually Jacoby Brissett. I mean, he started the game, got concussed against the Jets, and Jacoby played the final three quarters and led him to the fourth quarter comeback. So you're like, what? You know, the offense has been better. They're scoring over a touchdown more per game than they were with Brissett. The passing offense is, you know, consistently in the 220 to 240. Like, you know, they look like a real offense. They just, you know, the sum of the parts is just not good enough. I mean, the receiving core, I dubbed them stink, stank, stunk last year. They're maybe like a little whiff better than that this year. But he's done a great job, I think, of elevating. He is got the command of the room. He's not been an error repeater too much, which I think is, for a young player, especially at that position, is great. I would say he's definitely way more refined as a passer than when Josh came into the league. And that's not, we obviously know where Josh is. It took Josh 52 to 59, and then he made the big leap in year three. This kid's pretty accurate, and he's pretty accurate most of the time, you know, so he's not missing the layups that, that when you looked at his North Carolina tape, you said, ah, you know, he's, the footwork's a little rough, and he's got to do this, that, and the other thing. No, he's really done a good job of cleaning up some of that stuff, and he's just, he's a really good athlete. I have called him Josh Allen light, but when I say that, I always, I remind people, like, Josh is like 245. Drake's like 222, 225. Like Drake could probably put on 10 more pounds, but he's not getting to 245 unless, you know, he eats a lot of donuts, which might rob him of some of his athleticism. Right. You know, he's got a much better arm than anybody they've had in here since Tom was here. It's not Josh's arm. And as you and I, or we all know, Josh probably has the best arm in the league. You know, him or Patrick, you take your pick, right? You're not going wrong either way. So, you know, as a runner, he's really good, but he's not going to hurdle somebody. Or he's not going to say, you know what, a 240-pound linebacker, I'm going to run right through him. Drake does that. I don't know that Drake's getting up from that, at least not right here at this point in his career. So there's a lot of promise there, but they got to make sure they don't screw it up. And the way they have operated for the last 4 or 5 years, albeit under a previous regime, but now to this one, I'm not confident that they won't screw it up.
As someone whose athleticism was largely robbed by donuts myself, I think I could probably believe that that could happen. The touchdown flip he threw to Douglas in Arizona was very much an Allen kind of play, rolling left, you know, against his body and doing that. What are the Patriots doing at receiver? I play a lot of fantasy football, Mike, and it seems every week I'm, you know, they might have put somebody as inactive, moving Bourne in, or then they eventually waived Thornton, I guess. You've got two rookies there. Douglas, I mean, maybe, what's the pecking order? What's the strategy?
So the pecking order, they hoped, was going to be Douglas, Polk, Bourne when he came back, as he's come back from the ACL as your three, and then hoping that one of the younger players, either Thornton or Booty, sort of became that fourth guy. Thornton, what a disastrous pick that was, second round 3 years ago. He eventually decided he wasn't going to show up to the facility, so they cut him. And he is now on the practice squad for the Chiefs, and the Chiefs are desperate at wide receiver. Still haven't found a way to put him in there, so there's that part of it. Pop doesn't fit this offense, and he's had a decent year. I think he's right around, you know, 50 catches or something. But the West Coast offense that Alex is running is not built on small slot guys. So a lot of times when they're in 12 personnel, he's not one of the two receivers that's on the field. They don't like him outside, and I don't blame him. He's small. He's shifty, but he's small. And so were this the old offense, he might be an 80 to 90 catch guy. But in this offense, they kind of have to, like, go out of their way to get him involved. He doesn't really get stuff involved during the course of a play. It's, you know, it's your bump screens, your tunnel screens, those sorts of things. Polk, who's their second-round pick, has been an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
12 catches, 87 yards. He's still running the wrong routes. He did not come as billed at all. In fact, in August, he was excellent. I thought he was, in August, their best receiver, and it has not translated at all to the regular season, and it's a lost year for him now, and you have to even wonder if they say, you know what, we screwed this one up, and we're not going to sit around and wait for it and maybe move him in the offseason. Like, that's how bad it's been. Booty doesn't come off the field, and, like, he's made nice improvement this year, guys. He's a four on a good team. Like a playoff team, he might be a four. But on this team, he doesn't come off the field. Like, that's sort of the state of the wide receiver room. It's pretty rough.
You didn't mention Javon Baker in there, and that was a player that at draft time we were pretty interested in. A few of the analysts that we talked to regularly were pretty high on him, and talk about a lost year there too, right?
Consider yourself lucky that you did not bring him aboard. And look, different situations. He's just really immature. He has not learned how to become a pro. He was going to be active for the game in London against Jacksonville. He missed curfew. Like, it's just, this week he got a concussion somewhere between a walkthrough practice on Monday and showing up on Wednesday. Still don't quite know how that happened, whether he was in an accident or something. Jeez. Like, they're not talking about it, but, like, it just, he hasn't grown up. And there's a ton of talent there, but one target all year. Zero catches.
Yikes.
And pretty much is not active on game day.
Mike, before you go, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the top of the AFC with Kansas City up by two. on the Bills, but seems like almost unanimous that people see the Bills as having been the better team this season. Then you get to the playoff conversation and the history of the Chiefs and everything else. What do you think happens?
I think the Bills are the best team, and I felt this way for a while now. I think they've been the most consistent. Obviously, the defense the last couple of weeks is a little concerning for sure. And, you know, I know there was three starting secondary members didn't play last week, so you're dealing with some injuries. I would hope that Sean and Bobby Babich can figure out a way to at least shore that up, and so you're not dependent on Josh and the offense to score 35-plus every single week, because that seems like that's not a recipe that's going to get you all the way through and win a Super Bowl. But KC's done it with smoke and mirrors, and I applaud the heart of the champion and finding ways to win. Like, they believe in all these games that they're going to win. If they keep it close, they're going to win. But they don't have the same horses. And now you're dealing with the high ankle sprain for Pat. Like, who knows? Maybe, I don't know. I mean, if they're smart, they probably don't play Pat for the next couple weeks. Now, I already read today he's pushing to play.
Yeah, right.
But, like, they should be looking at it like, we need you right for January, or as right as you can be with a high ankle sprain, which, as we all know, if it's a good one, that doesn't heal for months. So who knows? Maybe the door gets open again, because I think we kind of looked at after the loss to the Rams, like the number one seed was probably dead and gone. But I don't know. Now with Mahomes injured, maybe the door opens again.
Mike, thank you for today, all your time you've given us over the years. Will you be coming up Sunday?
That is still in negotiation. It's kind of funny. We when they're bad like this, my boss looks at me and says, is it really worth spending, you know, a grand or whatever to right. go do it? You know, and we get access to the All 22 pretty much right after the game. So it's, if you miss something or you feel like you need to see something again, it's right there for you. So I don't know yet. We'll see.
Thanks for taking.
I miss my time up there, even with the weather. You guys know how I feel about Buffalo.
Thanks for taking the question. I'm planning to go to Foxborough in 2 weeks. Odd that these teams are both meeting so late. But we're waiting on like what the game is going to be worth, you know, what meaning right. there might be to it before making the investment on tickets. Because I don't know New England's market, but I'm thinking.
Honestly, if the game matters, Buffalo will have more fans in that stadium than New England will at the end of the year.
Yeah,
like that's the way it's going, and I think lately the secondary market you can get them real cheap if that's what you want to do.
Rod Rust, I think the only time I went to a Bills game in New England, Dick McPherson was the Patriots coach.
Oh, geez.
So to full circle here, Mike. Thank you, Mike. Always a pleasure. Happy holidays.
Nice to talk to you guys as always.
Thank you, Mike right. Giardi, Boston Sports Journal. Bills and Patriots, 4:25.
Is that Schaefer Stadium Sunday. Still?
Yeah, didn't you go to the same game? 89.
Yeah, I went to a Bills at 2 years in a row I went. I think maybe 90 as well. 89 and 90 I went. One of those years I forgot my tickets at home and I was in New Haven, Connecticut, so whatever, but still had to drive double back 2 hours.
Why didn't you just get them on your phone?
To get the tickets, right? Yeah, good. Yeah, this
why didn't
is
you
1989
just put
is why I didn't have them on my phone.
I bought my tickets. There were four friends of mine from college that went to that game, and I bought the tickets for that game. I went to school in Rochester, driving to Orchard Park to buy them at the stadium in a blizzard, like midweek.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my buddy's car, and I was alone. Like, that was maybe my first bad snowstorm that I'd ever driven a car in. And just remember, like, doing that, then getting the tickets, going right back to school. Went to the Grand Island football game at Rich Stadium on the Friday night. And that was the PA announcer for Grand Island for the first half. They did that, like, each school's guy got okay. one half of the game yeah. against Braxton and Lackawanna. Went to that game, might have been on my birthday. And then when that ended, 9 or 10 o'clock, my friends were with me, got in the car, and just took shifts driving, you know, to New England.
All right.
And basically just getting there in the morning for Bills Patriots. And the Bills lost. 89 was like that year where they were so inconsistent.
Yeah.
And they lost that game. Grogan, I think, still in 89, maybe. But, you know, college, you know, memorable, fun, even though they lost. And then right back home when the game was over.
Yep.
Somehow. Somehow that worked out.
A car full of people. You can make that work, especially when you're young.
That's it.
You can do that. Yeah, that's a great moment. We're like, I don't remember. I mean, exactly where we were on the highway, but maybe someone that we'd picked up a couple of friends. We had four people in the car. Someone said something about refrigerator, probably, and I went refrigerator, and I could see the tickets behind a magnet on the refrigerator. I'm like,
uh oh.
guys.
Oh no!
What kind of big tailgate plans did you have? We made the game. We were going early enough to, you know, hang out and all that. So, but we got there barely in time for kickoff.
A couple hours.
Yeah.
To Foxborough from there.
Yeah, like three-ish. I think. So we were more than halfway there. Had to turn and go back and, you know, whatever. But we made it.
803-0550, talking AFC, the playoff picture, the Patriots. Let us know what's on your mind. We will have Ross Tucker at 5 and then the Sabres tonight at Montreal. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
I think it's done good with the treatment, the work that we've gotten in. I mean, obviously, it's a short amount of time, but I thought we had a good day yesterday and good work after the game as well. So I'll get to work in practice and try to push it to see where I can get to. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to put our team in a bad position. So if I feel like I can play and go out there and win a football game, I'll play. And if I don't feel like that's the best case scenario, I'll let guys like Carson play. I mean, he's a guy that's won in this league as well. So it's just about pushing it this week, seeing where I'm at and making the best decision then.
Patrick Mahomes. I haven't listened yet this week, but I'm imagining Denny Carter at Roto World talking about Mahomes' injury as the world's lowest ever high ankle sprain. The high ankle sprain has never been lower than it is when it comes to Patrick Mahomes, who maybe doesn't end up missing a game at all. I bet he does. My guess would still be he misses this game.
I hope so, but I'll believe it when I see it. It just feels like too many times I've thought it's mostly in games and he leaves for a bit. There was one earlier this year already where he left the field and it looked like, oh my gosh, and then he was back in the third quarter or something. Like it was near halftime. He left for a little bit, but then came back. He just seems to really bounce back fast. I don't know if that means he's over-dramatizing these injuries that he suffers during these games or not, but I'm fully expecting to see him play. Like I get why KC should be cautious with him, and I guess I even want to trust that they will be. Like if he can't protect himself and put him, you know, it's putting himself at more risk to get caught and get hurt again and maybe more seriously, I would imagine they would be really cautious about that. But I don't know, man. He just plays them all.
Hypothetically, and I hope you don't mind this question, if the Chiefs had lost two of those games that they probably should have, Denver, Raiders, whatever, if they had lost two of those games, still had the division wrapped up in this hypothetical scenario, but they're 11-3, and so are the Bills, and Mahomes has this injury, would their attitude be any different? I'm thinking maybe not. Like, they can afford to play it safe. They can afford to lose one, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So they almost should. Who knows with the injury? You're sort of always guessing at like what it actually feels like, and you can't know. But they can afford to lose a game. I wonder if they were 11-3 instead of 13-1, tied with the Bills, but behind because of the loss here, if they would necessarily treat it any differently because of what happened last year.
Right, that's what I'm thinking here. In their experience, you'd like the bye and you like to be at home, but they won from the three last year. Right? Was that where they ended up? Three? So, you know, they won a wild card game and then had to come here and then had to go to Baltimore and it didn't deter them. So I would feel like, as much as you still would feel like you want to try your level best to run the race, that you would it's maybe the biggest reason why, you know, you could be right about him not playing. I'll believe it when I see it, but it would make sense for them to at least, you know, shoot for Christmas, maybe, if you think you can come back soon and not miss the requisite month with a high ankle sprain. At least you got another game in a few days, so don't rush this week, because they've got the cushion. They can't afford a loss. You know, the thing with them, though, is I don't know if they're thinking that way at all. All their games have been close, like even with him. So If they play without him when he could play and drop one and then lose one anyway, which, again, they could have lost any of these games that they've played. They've all mostly, except for just this last week, recently have been all one-score games. So I don't know how big they think their margin for error is, but sitting where they're sitting, I don't know, and what they did last year, I don't know, and you've won two Super Bowls in a row. Like, how driven do you need to be to get the one and rush him onto the field? I mean, everything says they should show play it, slow play it, but he always plays. So I think if they weren't all set up, I don't know that it would change much at all, because it sounds like they're open to him playing if they think he's okay to do it. And I don't know, man, where they're sitting, if Allen were nursing a high ankle sprain, but it didn't feel that bad and I could do some stuff on Tuesday and I'm hoping I can play, I think I'd be in here going, you have a 2-game lead for the one seed. Sit down, dude.
I assume Allen always has a high ankle sprain and 5 other ailments, but just doesn't matter to him. He's just impervious. I was talking to Davis Maddock on ADP Chasing. He's a Chiefs fan, and he said the guy that needs to sit is Kelce. Fantasy playoffs, what did Kelce give us in week 15 against Cleveland? Like 4 points? Just can't do anything with the ball anymore. He can get open, he can make that turn and catch the ball, and that's it. Like Ertz was. I mean, Ertz was the example for this, but he kind of has had a comeback with Washington this year. But remember, there was a Twitter account, like, did Zach Ertz break a tackle on that play? And no, was the name of the account. Like, then we'll always just say no. And that's kind of where Kelce is at. So
wow.
If the Chiefs get the luxury to rest players, he's one of them.
Yeah,
I would think.
So he's like a big broken down Beasley now. Basically, just catch the ball, fall down. Like, that's it. It's over. Thanks for getting open, but that's the end of the play.
Just as we're talking, it was announced the Chiefs listed Mahomes as having practiced fully today.
Of course they did.
And this is their, well, this is debatable, but I think this is their easiest game left. Home to the Texans. I'm also looking for the spread, and at BetMGM, it's off the board.
Because of Mahomes. Yeah.
But Houston had been favored by a couple points.
I think I agree with you. I think this is the easy. Pittsburgh should be a tougher game, and I think Denver's a tougher game.
Both on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, may he sit out, or may he play and they lose anyway. I don't know, whatever. Either way, it is pretty cool the way it's shaping up here with the timing of all this, that they play Saturday, Bills play Sunday, then they play Wednesday, and so do the Steelers, and like those are the two teams right around. You're in a sandwich between those two teams in the standings right now, and they'll play before you play your Week 17 game. So you can, you know, handle accordingly, depending on what those results look like, moving forward. I kind of like that.
803-0550 is the number. I'm thinking, I guess the Steelers could still have a chance to get to Kansas City. Maybe. I don't know tiebreakers. But otherwise, it's like the Bills are the only team affected by what happens with the Chiefs here in the next few weeks. And I don't like for, just sort of a simple thing, I don't like for the teams, whether it includes Pittsburgh or not, for the Bills, what their situation is going into this game in Kansas City. I said this yesterday. Like, they've already clinched their division, and they could still get to the 3 or even the 2 perhaps, but not likely. And they now, 3 games left, they can be judicious with their players, and I think also their play calling. I'd want to, again, what if it were us? Like, I'd want to use this game on Saturday at Kansas City to try to experiment and figure out what their tendencies are to my formations, you know, maybe be prepared if there were a playoff rematch to pivot off of that. So you always want to win, but it's not like Houston is in do or die mode. I mean, they're like in the opposite mode.
There's almost no urgency there. But I would think, other than, you know, pride and whatever, right? I mean, you probably want to avoid, you know, winning the division with a 9-8 record, right? Like, just tanking the rest of the season here if you're Houston. But yeah, I mean, I think you want to be thinking about, you know, familiarize yourself with the phrase load management.
Yeah,
I think if you're Houston, I mean, you're locked. That's it. Well, to an extent, they could still get the 3.
They could still move up, but. What's the difference, really? The difference is the Ravens. That's the difference. There is a difference between Baltimore and Denver or the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not nothing. And it's also, you know, usually how, at least it's how they talk. I think it's how it goes in football, where there's three games to go. We're not sitting here trying to strategize what not to do well, or just sort of like these sort of like next level concepts with motivation. And you know, you're just trying to win.
And what the matchups are going to be, because you can't really manage any of that. It's not only your result, obviously, is in your hands. I mean, Baltimore could still win their division. And then if you're playing to avoid them in a wild card matchup and they end up being the 3 seed, like, I mean, thanks for coming. I hope you enjoyed avoiding that, because you got to avoid it anyways.
Let's go to Dwayne here next on WGR. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon, everybody.
Hi.
I added up the points out of the 5 teams that Buffalo played with winning records. We gave up 175 points. If Josh Allen plays a great game, that might not be enough. He's got to play spectacular like he has the 2 weeks. And my question is also, if Pittsburgh and Baltimore end up in a tie, who gets the division, does it look like?
Steelers.
The Steelers get it. Ah, okay.
I'm not sure that's in every instance, but that's how it looks from at this point.
Because the way I was looking at the playoff thing, for some reason, I figure Baltimore might do in Tennessee. I mean, on the Texans. And whoever we got, we should beat them. I'm talking about Kansas City wins the thing. So that means Baltimore would go to Kansas City, since they're the wild card team, and Pittsburgh would go here.
If the Steelers were to win that game, right. That's right.
Right. So it looks like, in that scenario, the number 2 spot would be the best spot. I mean, if Baltimore could stay in the spot they're in.
Well, that's right. You're reading, thanks, Dwayne, you're reading this correctly. If that happens, you still have to beat Denver or the Chargers or whoever else might slide in there, and that's not a given. You're not saying this. It doesn't evolve to the point where you'd rather not be the one to avoid that matchup, I think. And if Pittsburgh isn't that strong and it's Denver at Pittsburgh and Denver wins, then whoever the highest seed is, or lowest, right, the 6,
mm-hmm.
would go to the 1. And now you're playing the Ravens if that the rest right. of what you said is true. I don't know that Pittsburgh win a tiebreaker in every situation, but I've played around with that playoff machine a little bit, and that's usually where I end up. The Ravens will have split with Pittsburgh if they win their meeting on Saturday, but the Steelers still have the edge for some other reason in the tiebreaker. Ross Tucker coming up at 5. Thanks, Dwayne. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here, WGR. To the previous conversation, the Steelers have the Ravens capped, I guess, on the tiebreaker because of their respective conference records. Pittsburgh is 7-2 in the AFC, and the Ravens are 5-4. If the Ravens beat Pittsburgh Saturday to forge a tie there, that would get them one closer. But if they stay tied, they'll still be one game behind in the conference tiebreaker. So the Ravens will have to finish with a better record mm-hmm. than the Steelers to win the AFC North, even if they win Saturday.
All right, noted.
Noted.
Yeah.
Did you bet any player prop futures this year?
No. I did not. No.
Did you see David Montgomery?
I did not. How close did he get to his numbers?
Half a yard.
Oh, my God. Oh, jeez. Wow.
775 and a half, and he's at 775 out for the year. That's tough.
That's a bad one.
I like unders. I don't bet. I don't think I did any this year from the beginning of the season. I did that chase bet just, you know, happily at some point in the middle of the season because I liked his price. Just happened to look mm-hmm. at it and, okay, to lead the league in receiving yards, which he is likely to do if he stays healthy and keeps playing. But my instinct on those is always to go under because of injury risk. Like if a guy,
mm-hmm.
maybe if they miss a lot of games, the bet is void. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. If there's a certain number of games you have to be eligible to play in order for the bet to still be valid. I don't know. It's not a market I fiddle around in too much. Really, the only futures stuff I ever do is the division winners.
Yep.
In football.
I lost on that 8-team.
Oh,
parlay.
Yeah, I miss them. They're gone now, you know, because teams get eliminated eventually. So if you're like me, and because Tennessee was like plus 350 or something to win the AFC South, you're like, I'm going to just drop that in there. Oh, look at the odds, idiot. You know, when they get eliminated, then that bet is no longer. It's so, you know, I go to the open page and like there's nothing there.
That one would annoy me, just not in terms of a parlay, but. If you'd bet somebody other than Houston to win the AFC South, which I would have liked this year,
mm-hmm.
I would be annoyed because I think my premise was right.
Yeah, that's why I did it. I didn't think Houston was as rock solid as you know the markets were telling you they were. So I did two different ones, and one of them I think I had Houston in it.
Well, I had Jacksonville in one of mine.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been a playoff team.
Right.
And if you don't like Houston, mm-hmm. Indianapolis, maybe, Jacksonville, maybe. But three games left, and Houston is just okay, and they've already clinched it.
Right.
That would annoy me. It still does.
I'm annoyed.
Even though I haven't betted it.
I'm annoyed.
I am annoyed that Houston, and we'll see if it manifests on Saturday, like that they're sort of locked in. Already, in terms of how they look against the Chiefs. You never know.
I just kind of miss those bets being there when I go to my FanDuel page. Like, even though I knew they were not going to win but by a certain point in the season, still, it's nice. Oh, look at that. Gone.
Right. I missed the option to cash out for 3 cents.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
What do I want to just take the 3 cents?
Right.
Tail between my legs. Ross Tucker after the update, Sabres and Canadiens tonight on WGR.